Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Handmade listeners. I'm Barry Maxtay.
I'm Ben Vandervelde.
And we'd love you to listen to Worst Foot Forward, our podcast all about failure.
Each week we are joined by a guest to discuss the world's worst something, from detective to invasion, train to horror movie. We dive into humankind's darkest depths in search of the absolute pits.
We've even had your very own Dr. Anna Porshaisky on the show twice. In The World's Worst Material, she shared her innate hatred of graphene, and during our live show, she let loose on sea salt and is now persona non grata in the town of Malden.
On Worst Foot Forward, we've learned that conspiracy theorists think rocks aren't really hard, why one French physicist invaded the Channel Island of Sark, and how exactly to make a wasp gun.
While also uncovering the railway station of the dead, the doctor who put goat balls into human scrotums, and the West End musical funded by bird poo.
Subscribe to Worst Foot Forward on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Check out our website, worstfootforwardpodcast.com, and join us for some fun-filled zero worship.
Is hair a material?
Are biscuits a material?
Are crystals a material?
Is plastic a material?
Is porridge a material?
Can gases be a material?
Are eggs a material?
Is water a material?
What do you call everything that isn't a material?
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at your question.
And yet you continue to do so.
Hello, and welcome back to Handmade, the making podcast with real talk about materials. I'm your host, Anna Pozhaisky, and this episode I talk to paper engineer Rob Ives. I know that last episode I promised you stone, but I'm slipping this one on paper into the feed just before we get there. This conversation was recorded during the UK coronavirus lockdown, and I spoke to Rob over the internet from our respective homes. I started by asking Rob how he came to become a paper engineer, and also what's a paper engineer.
This is how I started off. I was a teacher till 2020. No, till 2000. And since then, I started off just doing paper engineering, and I made paper models to sell online. But then gradually I've got more and more things as well. So I do like 3D printing, and I do laser cutting, and I do things made out of paper clips and wire and things like that. And basically I design stuff. I put them on my website, and I hope that people come along and buy the ideas, buy the designs, and then take them home and make their own things.
Mm. How did you get into designing with paper?
I think because it's such an easily accessible material.
Mm.
So it's something I could do without having a massive workshop and loads of tools. I can make gears, I could make levers, I could make all sorts of interesting mechanisms, and all I needed was a ruler, a pair of scissors, and a sharp knife.
Mm.
And you can do those things without having to have a lathe and a laser cutter and the expensive stuff. So it was like an accessible way for me to start making things. And I've done it for a long time. I've been making paper models, I think, since 1990, probably, like something like that. I think 93 was the first thing that I actually produced as a this is a kit and you can make stuff out of it. And then I was sort of waiting for the internet to be invented at that point, you know.
Yeah. So was there a certain model that you saw of someone else's that kind of ignited your interest in modelling with paper?
Yeah, I used to go, there was a shop in Harrogate that I used to go into from time to time, and they had paper kits by a guy called Peter Markey, whose stuff is still around. I think he's died. But his stuff is still around and you still see it online. And he had things, there was things like a cow that opened and closed its mouth. And they were very, they were sort of cubic type things. So it was like a square cow with a square head and cocktail stick parts inside it and bits of string and things. And you turn the handle on the side and they did things. So there was a cow thing, there was maybe a barking dog, that sort of thing. And they were all, these were just basically printed on, you know, it was like single colour on single sheets of cardboard. And then they'd be inside a bag and there'd be all the other bits that you needed. So the paper clips and the bits of string and the cocktail sticks and things. And I made those when I was a student. So that must have been, that's like 30 years ago. So yeah, I've been doing this for a while. Mm. And those were sort of, those were ideas that just sort of simmered around in my head, and I sort of made my own models and without any particular purpose behind them. And then I was making some models at a, I used to be a teacher, used to be a math specialist in a primary school, and I was a member of the Association of Teachers of Mathematics, and I went to a conference, an ATM, Association of Teachers of Mathematics conference, and was in their workshop bit. They had this workshop. They had like sessions where you could go and find out about different, all sorts of different things. But the best part of it was the workshop, where you could just go and they had just like piles of resources for you to play with. And you got to talk to people who were just like really interesting people and sit and make things. Mm. Geometrical shapes and trees made out of straws and all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a mechanical movement that was a two-axis joint that would bend in the x-axis and the y-axis for obscure reasons. And someone from, there was a publisher there, as part of the conference, there was a publisher section as well. And there was one of the publishers there was Tarquin Publications. There was a guy from Tarquin, saw this model that I'd made, asked if he could take it away. He took it away, and like a couple of months later, someone from Tarquin contacted me and said, can you write us a book?
Oh, wow.
And there were, it was really, have you got any ideas for a book, was the sort of starting point. I suggested a book of working, cut out and make working locks.
Interesting.
And so I made this book called The Paper Locksmith. And it had in it a combination lock, a Yale type lock, a warded lock, and possibly something else, but I can't remember.
Wow, and all of that but made out of paper.
But it was all cut out and made, yeah, they're all working locks. And you can still, because Tarquin went defunct eventually and the copyright returned to me, so you can actually get those, that book you can get off the off my website as a downloadable.
Oh, cool.
So all of those models are available now. But anyway, so that sold pretty well for them and they were really pleased with it. So like a year later on, they contacted me again and said, would you like to write another book? And I said, I certainly would. And I did, I thought, sort of going back to the Peter Markey thing, with the automata and the barking dogs and the, I can't remember what the cow did. I'm sure he had a cow anyway. I went, sort of going back to that idea, I suggested a book of automata and they said, yeah, that's great, let's do that. And I went to, I designed six different automata for them and they said, right, we're going to use four of them. So the remaining two, I thought, all right, I'm going to try selling these myself. And Paper Automata, that book, Paper Automata, is still in print. You can still get that on Amazon. Tarquin's copyrights got bought out by another company. So that book's still available. But the two extra models that I did, I did them in this sort of Peter Markey style, where it was just a couple of sheets of cardboard and printed in just a single colour and a sheet of instructions and all in a plastic bag.
Mm.
And I sort of went on from there. And, yeah, I did a whole load. I sort of got more and more complicated with the printing to the point where it was like I was printing like 20, 30,000 pounds worth of stuff at a time, and it was just terrifying. It was.
Yeah, you wouldn't want an office fire, would you?
No, indeed. I spent too much time just packing stuff up and shipping it out. I didn't want to employ someone. I'm not really interested in that part of it. I'm a design person, really. I'm an ideas person. And it just got more and more complicated. And then in the end, I just thought, right, I'm just going to do downloads. And I ended up selling all that off to somebody else and moving on to downloads. And that's what I do now.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense in the modern age.
Yeah, quite.
So it's really surprising to me as a paper layperson to hear that you could make something as structurally sound and as mechanically possible as a combination lock. So kind of how do you manage to get all these amazing materials properties out of paper, you know, strength, and how do you get that out of paper?
It's really surprising, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have a piece of really flexible paper, and if you put a crease in it, all of a sudden it becomes far more rigid. And then if you just fold the crease over a couple of times and make it into a tube, suddenly you've got like a structurally strong shape, as long as it doesn't get wet. And then it's just a case of what I try and do is make the model to the material rather than, so I'm making a model out of paper that uses the structure of paper rather than trying to, you'll see there are various other people, various other automata makers who make paper automata, but they are at heart automata makers who make things out of brass and wood and things like that.
Right.
And what you see, if you look at their stuff, is that they will try to make pieces of wood out of the cardboard.
Yeah.
So they'll fold it up into rectangles and put ends on it so that it looks like a piece of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll glue those together. And I try to do, and you can understand why, because that's that's the material that they're used to using.
Mm.
But I'm trying to do more, right, let's look at what paper does by itself and try and make things that use the qualities of paper rather than trying to imitate something else.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
crafts. So you mentioned creasing there as one of the tools that you can employ to modify the materials properties of paper. Are there any other techniques that you tend to use frequently in your designs?
There's a whole sort of awareness of using tension rather than compression. So if I'm using cams and things like that, I try and make sure that I try not to use, like Peter Markey had all the bits of cocktail stick and string and things like that. And I try not to use anything like that, but I do allow myself to use coins as weight because there is no weight in paper really, and it's really difficult to make something with any weight to it.
Right.
But then if I'm making like a cam follower or something like that, so I have a cam on a camshaft that you turn around with a handle, and then you need to use that camshaft to make something move up and down. And rather than pushing something, I try and make a design so that as the cam moves up and down, it's pulling on the paper, and then you don't need to worry about anything being structural. You're just using, because paper's quite strong in tension.
Right.
But if it's a piece of flat paper and it's in compression, it just immediately bows up into a loop.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's really easy to rip a piece of paper with a certain technique. And I guess that's intention as well. But you must have to be, I guess you have to be quite careful about sort of the angles and the direction of the tension.
Yeah, so you put the tension straight on. If you put the tension at an angle, you end up ripping the pieces. Just sort of wrapping things around so you can wrap. So I've just trying to explain it. Sort of wrap, like in wrapping a strap round a tube, and then when you pull the strap, the tube itself unwinds.
Oh, yeah.
And if you do that straight, it works really well. And you can have two different straps. So you can have one going clockwise, one going anti-clockwise. And if you pull one, the tube rolls one way. And if you pull the other, the tube rolls the other way. As long as everything's straight, as soon as you pull it off to an angle, then the paper rips or it comes untangled or the parts tangle up with each other.
So
there's a sort of, you've got to be, there's an awareness that you have to have about which direction, because it's a limited material in that sense, but it also, the limitations make it interesting.
It's no wonder you called yourself a paper engineer, given that you have to think so much about forces and direction and stuff.
It's weird, isn't it? Yeah. It's surprising how much maths is involved as well.
Yeah, I bet.
Just in sort of designing 3D shapes and things.
Yeah. So can you take me through the process then of, from when you have your first inkling of an idea, how do you go about translating that from an idea into a finished paper design?
I carry a notebook around with me because I have ideas at the strangest moments. Because a lot of my ideas are just sort of intersections of two different things. So, I can't think of an example of handboard. So the other day, so I was out walking the other day and found an empty snail shell. And I had this idea of making a model that uses the actual snail shell rather than trying to recreate, because a couple of times I've tried to make shells and things, and they're difficult, spirals are difficult to make. And I just suddenly thought, well, I could just use the snail shell and then make a model uses the snail shell. And so I sketched some ideas down in my notebook and then forgot about it for a bit. And then a few weeks later, I'm looking through my notebook, see what I've got in it. So at that point, then it's like, okay, so I need to firm it up into more of an idea. What am I going to do? What materials am I going to use? What's it going to look like? And that one was more of a sort of paperclip. And I think it's paperclip paper. So the body of the snail is made out of paper. This is actually on my website. The finished product is on my website now. So the body's made out of paper. So there's a degree of, like, that's my base paper engineering skills, making the shape of a snail's body.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll sort of sketch out what I'm going to do. And then I do a lot of the design part of it in just sort of iterative. I'll just make stuff and see if it works,
right,
and cut it up if it doesn't work. And if it's not quite the right size, I just cut bits off it.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lot of cutting apart and gluing back together again to try and make something look right. And eventually you get to a point where you think, right, that's about right. And then at that point, I then cut everything up and lay it out flat, put it in the scanner on the computer, on the printer.
Right.
And then transfer it to the computer. And at that point, it becomes a lot more structured and, right, this is the end product. But up till that point, it's very fluid and there's a lot of changes. And yeah, the late stage design models look kind of rough because they're just lots of bits of paper all stuck on top of each other and bits cut off and different colour pieces stuck to the back. And
And then I guess you have to reverse engineer your own design in order to then make it two-dimensional again for other people to be able to recreate it.
Yeah, so this is when it's sort of, so you cut it, I'll maybe, if it's a three, especially if it's complicated 3D shape, so I'll draw a line to it where I think that's going to be a crease line. This is where there's going to be a seam. I'll draw that on and then I'll cut it all out with me really fine scissors and lay all the pieces out on the scanner and then scan it in and then print and then do, like, trace around the scan and then print those parts out and hope that it all fastens back together again. Because this is a sort of terrifying moment where you've made something that you're really pleased with.
Yeah.
And you've got to cut it into little tiny pieces.
Oh, so. No. That does sound a bit precarious.
Yeah.
So I suppose one question is, why paper?
At this point, it's because that's what I understand.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as a material, I really like it as a material. It is just so, it's just surprising. Still, it still surprises me. You can start off with a flat piece of paper and you put the creases in and you do the stuff and all of a sudden you've got a rigid 3D shape that's nothing like what you started with, and it's surprisingly tactile and nice, you know, and pleasing to the eye. So, and also it has that whole thing where I can design something, I can put it up on the website and someone in Singapore or America or wherever can just download it, and they can download it the same day that I've posted it and make stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. It's very sort of translatable.
Yeah. And that whole sort of zero weight model works quite nicely for me. It's been really good during lockdown. That's been a good thing that's worked really well for me during lockdown, because people have been wanting stuff to do with their kids in lockdown. So
yeah. I guess it's very cheap as well, so it's very accessible for lots of people.
Yeah, yeah.
When you said zero weight, I was expecting you to say zero waste.
No.
And a nod to the recyclable nature of paper as well.
Yeah, it's certainly recyclable, isn't it? But I mean, yeah, I get through huge amounts.
Yeah, I bet.
In the sort of in the prototyping, especially when it's like the printed parts.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, I'll print a part out and it's got this one part. And I cut that out, and then you can't use the rest of it. You can't put the piece of paper back in the printer, so it's just this one corner's gone.
Right, you're the offcuts.
Yeah.
Do you use any particular special type of paper?
I use 230 micron card, basically.
What's that to the layperson? Cereal box.
Gram.
Or thinner than that?
Thinner than that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like photocopy card. So if you're in an office, it's the sort of thing that you could put in your photocopier at an office. It's just a thin card, basically, thin craft card.
Yeah, okay.
And I use coloured card for prototyping generally, because it makes things look more attractive if they're colourful. And then the final products are generally printed in colour on white card. So the stuff that I send out to people, that I upload for people to make,
yeah,
as they are colour files, and they print them out on their printer. And sometimes it's like print it out, flip the card over, print out the back.
Oh, interesting.
So you've got colour. Yeah, you've got colour on both sides of it, which is also it's possible, but that kind of causes people difficulties with alignment front and back. And
yeah, I'd probably flip it the wrong way and print it upside down on the inside or something.
Yeah, I just, I still do that. but also there's difficulties with most of the people that I, most of my customers are from the States.
Oh, interesting.
So they use letter size card.
Oh.
But the people in Europe use A4 size card, and then the sort of conversion between the two and being able to flip stuff back, flip it over and print on the back whilst using different sides of card has been problematic in the past, it seems. I've not heard it from anyone recently. I mean, I've sort of done some models on letter size and some models on A4 size recently.
Yeah.
And I haven't had anyone getting back to me saying, I can't get it to print back. I can't get the back to print out lined up. So either people are just buying them and not doing them, or,
hopefully
or they've
not.
Worked it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hopefully not.
Well,
I get nice pictures of stuff that people have made. So.
Oh, that's cool. That must be nice.
That's kind
see.
Of gratifying. Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah.
So are there any. We've spoken about a few limitations of paper. You mentioned that it's very lightweight, so that can be tricky if you're wanting to incorporate weight into a design. Are there any other major limitations of paper?
I think just sort of precision. Precision is really difficult. You can do maybe half a mil, something like that. But if you start doing, if you've got things like trying to do gears and things like that, I can gear down. I've sort of worked out how to do gears, where instead of the gears being edge to edge like a normal gearbox, they're at 90 degrees to each other, so they sort of mesh with each other sideways. And that sort of, that works pretty well, but you can't gear up, you can only gear down. There's just not enough strength in the paper to gear up.
Okay, the forces just get too much in it.
Yeah, yeah, basically. Yeah. And you don't get, and there's, you can't do like a really sweet bearing out of cardboard. So you know, there's the friction builds up and things get too stiff. And
right, interesting.
So yeah, so that's just a case. But then that's just a case of okay, well, I can't do that, so that's fine. I'll just do stuff that involves gearing down. And the geared models are interesting. They're fun to do. They just it adds an extra dimension. And they work pretty well, really, considering. And it, you know, the stuff that I've in the past, I've made where I've built individual teeth and each tooth is like a box section. And it's a bit, there's a book called, it's called A Paper Clock or something like that. And you can make like a working clock. It's this massive book.
Wow.
And it's got, it's got all the gears and everything like that. It's got the escapement mechanism and everything. It's all made of cardboard. But it goes back to that thing I was saying earlier about it being, well, this is a wooden clock converted to paper.
Yeah.
So you've got gears with depth. They are, you know, it's like I think it's a 216 tooth gear or something like that. This is as far as I got making the book, making the models. And I look, because someone gave me the book and it's like, I'll have a go with this. And I did I cut out the 216 tooth gear and thought, I'll do that. I'll do that another day.
Yeah,
and it's still in a box somewhere. You know? So, rather than making like, so in their one, they've basically got two gears, front and back, two gear pieces, front and back. And then the teeth are made from a zigzaggy piece. That fits between the two pieces. See what I mean?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So, and I did that a few times in the past, but I have this thing about trying to use the material as the material is, rather than trying to recreate a different material out of it. So I tried doing just a single flat gear, just a single sheet, And I laminate a couple of pieces together, and then I cut the gear teeth out. So I've just got a flat gear that's made out of fairly thick card because it's laminated. And then I just mesh that with another gear at 90 degrees to it.
Oh, cool. So you don't need any depth to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's cool.
And that's what I've ended up with is my sort of, this is my solution to that particular problem. And it's the same with boxes. I'm sort of looking back at older models that I've done, and I've changed the way that I make boxes. That I've sort of settled on a design of box, which I'm really pleased with. And I think it's like this is how you make a box out of card that's going to have a mechanism inside it. It works really well, I think. The sides and the top, and then just flaps connected to the side. It's very hard to describe. But what I'm trying to do is not have, not like a cereal box type box, but actually it's like two C-shaped sections.
Yeah, I can picture that.
I do describe it. And then two C-shaped sections and a top and a bottom.
Yep.
And so it's the end of four pieces, and that makes your box. And it's surprisingly rigid and surprisingly satisfying. And I sort of settle down on that. And I keep coming back and looking at things like that. Like I use the same sort of handle as a winder for winding camshafts and gears and things like that. And I keep coming back and looking at it thinking, I wonder if I could do that a different way. And I think it's sort of settled to the point now where I just copy and paste from the previous model. It's like, well, I'll use that handle.
Yeah.
And one day I'll come back and have another look at it and see if I can make it more, see if I can improve on it. But I can't think of anything at the moment. I think I've sort of hit the optimum handle design for a cardboard handle. You know?
Nice. Are there any other sort of forces that you've used in designs? I'm thinking maybe like heat, or I guess you mentioned that you want to avoid the paper from getting wet because that makes it.
I've tried doing like sand in a hopper, salt in a hopper.
Oh, cool.
So. The design that I did ages ago, I need to dig it out actually because I never published it, but it was basically a hopper at the top with a funnel feeding out to a small hole at the bottom, and then like a turbine type thing underneath it.
Nice.
Yeah, I need to go back to that actually.
That's cool.
So you just fill it up with salt or sand or whatever, and it runs through and turns the wheel, and it worked really nicely, but it didn't get it. I didn't connect it to anything, so I need to go back and do that and make it do something.
Yeah, nice. Have you ever made a Rube Goldberg machine out of paper?
I've not. No,
it sounds like the ultimate kind of end point to your experiments.
Yeah, I've seen some people on YouTube who do the most amazing things, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. Maybe that'll be, if we ever go into a second lockdown or something, that can be your lockdown project.
Yeah.
Is there anything that's really surprised you about paper?
No, only that I still find it interesting, and it's been like 25 years, 30 years, something like that. So
yeah.
And I still find new and improved ways of doing things that I'd already thought I'd cracked as a problem.
Yeah.
I find better ways of doing stuff. So it's just sort of the general versatility of it, and just the fact that you can still find, after all this time, still find new and surprising ways of using it that surprise me, so hopefully surprise other people.
Yeah, that's cool. So if people have enjoyed hearing about your designs and want to have a look at what they look like, where can we see them online?
If you go to robives.com, robives.com, there are links to all of them. To this, my Instagram feed, my Twitter feed. I've got a YouTube, which I haven't used for a while, but there's still some stuff on it.
Nice.
Robives.com. that's got the links to everything.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. It's been really great to chat to you, and a really surprising take on paper.
It's a really fun material, and I strongly recommend it to people. It's something that you can do anywhere. You know, a pair of scissors, and you can make things. It's surprising and fun.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. Really nice to talk to you.
So that was the marvellous Rob Ives. Thanks so much to him for coming on the show. And don't forget to check out his website and social media. That's all for this week. As always, I'd be really grateful if you could rate and review the podcast everywhere where you can rate and review it. I would like to say a huge thank you to everyone who supported the podcast financially by giving a one-time donation. Thanks to the wonderfully generous Coralie, Andres and Mark Hipwell. You guys are the best. If you're enjoying the podcast and you have the means to give a one-time donation to help keep it running, you can donate at supporter.acast.com/handmade. Don't forget to say hi online. We're on Twitter at Real Talk, that's R-I-A-L Talk, and on Instagram at Handmade Pod. Thanks as always to Dave Shepherd for our awesome cover art and to Alex Lathbridge for the music mix. I'm going to be taking a little break for the next couple of weeks, but I will be back before you know it with some more smashing interviews with top material heads. Next time is the long-promised stonemason Andrew Zeminski. So until then, take care, thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time on Handmade.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.